highlighting the amazing stories from inside the North Clackamas School District. This is the Proud to Be NCSD podcast, hosted by longtime principal and current community relations director, Curtis Long.
It's just after lunch recess at Bilquist Elementary, and moments after second grade Jace has caught his breath from skidding down slides and persistently pacing around the playground, this energetic 8-year-old now finds himself carefully clenching his pencil and concentrating on printing perfect penmanship on his paper.
Okay, what letter's next?
W.
So a V and then another V.
You're right. You slide down, slide up. Can you make a W over here? Good job.
Though the catchy self-imposed sound effects might say otherwise, this is not an easy task for Jace, who earlier this year struggled with having enough finger strength to hold a pencil, so much so that anything he put on paper was barely visible.
Oh, easy peasy when you do it like that, right?
Easy peasy.
As you can probably tell, Jace loves the positive feedback he receives from Miss Rose, so much so that he always does his best to dot all his I's and cross all his T's.
Okay, let's do T. What do we do first?
Start at the top.
And then you slide down and across. Slide down and across.
Miss Rose, however, is not Jace's second grade teacher in room 7. She's one of the North Clackamas School District's 9 occupational and physical therapists who spend their days crisscrossing from school to school, making sure students with physical challenges like Jace can be just as successful in school as all of their classmates. As we'll hear in this week's Proud to Be NCSD podcast, those physical challenges can range from fine motor finger strength like Jace.
Good, you are so focused.
To kids trying to maintain their balance navigating playground equipment. These are the North Clackamas staff members who help remove barriers for students who physically just might need a little extra boost. Who are these licensed occupational and physical therapists in NCSD? How do they consult with families and staff members? And most importantly, how do they make such lasting connections with NCSD kids? And joining us today on this lively edition of the Proud to Be NCSD podcast are members of the NCSD Motor Team. Gotta like that term. They're going to explain it for you. That's Rose Brenner, Nicole Nix, Morgan Garner, and Lisa Klein. Rose, Nicole, Morgan, Lisa, such a pleasure to have all of you taking time out of your busy schedules today. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you for having us.
Yeah.
This is Morgan Garner. I am the occupational therapist that serves the Milwaukee Feeder here in our district. It's my second year in our district. Before this, I was an occupational therapist doing skilled and outpatient rehab with older adults.
So I can tell that some of you have listened to our podcast before because you know what's coming. I'm going to ask each of you to introduce yourselves, and Morgan already jumped the gun on that. So let's have each one of you introduce yourselves and explain kind of what you do in North Clackamas and maybe how you arrived in North Clackamas, just as Morgan modeled for you there right off the top.
I'm Rose Brenner. I'm another occupational therapist at North Clackamas, and I work with the Rex Putnam Feeder System. So I think all of us OTs are responsible for around 6 or 8 schools, but those are the ones I'm in charge of.
And you were Miss Rose there at the beginning of the podcast working with little Jace there.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
I'm Nicole Nix. I'm the physical therapist assistant for the whole district. And I'm half of the physical therapy team, and Craig Anderson is our PT. So I'm sure you guys have seen him around. I have been in the district for almost 19 years, and before that, I was in school nursing.
That just leaves me. I'm Lisa Klein. I'm the CODA, Certified Occupational Therapy Assistant for North Clackamas School District. I've been a CODA for 32 years. That means I'm the eldest of the group.
But I've been here the longest.
That's true. And I graduated from CODA school and went right into working in schools. I worked for Clackamas ESD for 20 years before I came to North Clackamas. I was contracted with North Clackamas, and then they hired us all as employees in 2009. And I actually work in all the different feeder systems and support all the other 4 OTs. And I really love working with kids.
Well, we're so glad to have all of you here today. And as you mentioned, we're missing a few from your team. You've mentioned a couple of names, and feel free to make sure we recognize those names throughout the podcast. So, interestingly, let's start from the beginning and maybe the most basic we can for some of our listeners. And we've heard the terms occupational therapy and physical therapy. Let's take those apart. What's the difference between occupational therapy and physical therapy, especially when it comes to a school setting?
So physical therapy, we work on the big motor movements, jumping, hopping, skipping, how they access the school, whether it's in a wheelchair, crutches, or how they run out to recess.
And a occupational therapist works with someone on their occupations. And in this case, that would be a student's occupations, which would be anything they do in school. So their academics or how they're participating at recess or lunch or specials.
Yeah, I think that's totally right. I think in the past, how it was thought of is only fine motor skills and only handwriting. And really, what we're able to do, given our license and our education, is a lot more than that, depending on what our caseload needs.
So we're thinking occupational therapy, you think of it as an occupation, and a student's occupation then is to be able to participate in school the same way as all of his or her peers can participate in school. So that's what, Rose, you were doing occupational therapy then with Jace there at the beginning on gripping his pencil. And I know you had explained to me he'd come quite a long ways from the beginning of the year to where he is now.
Yeah, he has. He's come a long way with his hand strength and his just fine motor control, but also he's getting a lot better at just regulating his nervous system, at learning different strategies to calm his body down, like breathing strategies and other strategies and things like that. And I think his teachers and the people who support him every day have learned a lot about how to best support him in the classroom.
That's the one thing I like about occupational therapy is that we kind of look at the whole student and see what barriers they are having during their school day that keep them from being independent and being able to do everything that their peers can do. And so every student is an individual, and we take a look at what barriers are impacting their day. And it might be sensory strategies. We do a lot of collaboration with teachers as well as working directly with students. And we try and teach them as much independence as possible, because with occupational therapy, that's the key, is we want people in general able to be independent, be able to access and do everything that they want to be able to do in their day and be successful and happy kids, people, just all around.
I think our National Organization of Occupational Therapy, the motto is living life to the fullest. So that's our goal, is to allow the students to do the best that they possibly can in school.
We look at how they function in their school environment and kind of overlap with occupational therapy and access and breaking down those barriers.
So how do you come across these kids? Do they qualify? Are they identified early on, maybe even before they arrive in kindergarten? Do they have to qualify for your services? And if so, how do they do that?
Yes. So we support students who are on IEPs or individual education plans.
Yeah.
And in order to have an occupational therapist support an individual student, that student would need to have an OT evaluation. And they would access that by their teacher or other school members really flagging that student as, we have some concerns about this student in the areas of fine motor, or in the case of physical therapy, maybe it's gross motor skills or safety concerns or sensory concerns, anything like that. And after that, they may try some strategies to see, can we address this problem without an OT or a PT? And if not, they would get evaluated, and we would decide based off of that evaluation as a team whether or not a licensed physical or occupational therapist is necessary for that student to achieve their individualized goals.
But they also, a lot of those kids do come in from the early intervention ECSE program. So when they come to kindergarten, they've already had transition meetings with their previous PTs and OTs and their upcoming PTs and OTs here in our district, and then they come up with the collaborative school-based goals.
So if a teacher has concerns or a school team has concerns, I imagine they contact you right away, and you're a part of that evaluation process then.
Right.
We can be. It often depends. Would you like me to walk you through our referral process?
For sure.
Quickly?
Let's walk through that.
Okay.
Now remember, we have listeners that are just kind of figuring this out or finding this out for the first time. So for someone like me who's been a part of a school for a long time, or all of us, it's a little bit different than someone who hasn't been through this before. So let's walk through the process.
All
How
right.
would that work, Morgan?
So we're going to have our fictitious student, Johnny.
All right, Johnny.
Who's having a hard time holding a pencil. And Johnny's in kindergarten, and his teacher has concerns that he can't hold a pencil.
Mm-hmm.
And so his teacher might reach out to us and say, hey, I really think Johnny needs occupational therapy. So then we would look at our referral process and say, one, is Johnny already on an IEP?
Okay.
If he is, then we're going to send our what we call our pre-referral strategies, which would be some like basic things for the teacher to try that might fix the problem without him actually needing occupational therapy. So like, oh, have you tried teaching him the pinch flip trick for holding a pencil? And we actually, I should back up a little bit. We actually don't even really want to know Johnny's name at this time.
Okay.
We just want to know.
We'll pretend we don't know
yes.
who Johnny is. Okay.
That this teacher has a student that she needs help with.
Gotcha.
And the reason we don't want to know Johnny's name at this point is because we haven't gotten parent consent to observe him or provide any specific recommendations. We're just
so
kind
before you do that, you would consult with the parents.
Yeah, so that's part of the referral process. Right. Is we do have to get consent. So we say, hey, try these strategies for 4 to 6 weeks. Let us know how they work out. And then if you still have concerns and you feel like occupational therapy is needed to address these concerns, then we will get parent consent for an evaluation. We'll evaluate the student. The IEP team will all meet. We'll determine what type of OT service is needed. Do we need consultation or direct services? If we are going to have direct services, we usually want to have a collaborative goal with the learning specialist. So that might be a writing goal where we say, okay, these are the objectives that we can work on together that we feel like would be helpful for Johnny. If it's a consultation model, we're more just providing some strategies. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure we'll go into this more later.
Yeah.
I mean, sometimes kids go through the evaluation process and they are determined that they don't really need occupational therapy. But, you know, that's a team decision, just like any IEP determination would be. So it might just be that, and our level of service also depends on the team.
And Morgan, I think you mentioned before, if a student is already on an IEP, we've heard that term before. Rose mentioned that too. So IEP means that they're receiving special education services within their school. What if kids aren't? What happens then?
That's an excellent question. So if they don't already have special education services and the teacher says, hey, I think this student would benefit from occupational therapy, then we would get the case manager involved and say, hey, is this a student who's on your radar? Are you thinking of doing some testing and maybe bringing him into special education? Because then it would be an initial evaluation. And so your original question had be, would we be part of that initial evaluation? Mm. And sometimes we are. Sometimes the teacher says, hey, I've already tried all these strategies. Mm-hmm. None of them have worked. I think he still really needs help. And then we would be in from the very beginning.
So we've talked a little bit about the referral process. And I think some people will think, especially parents in our district, hey, my child is struggling with this. Why is this referral process so arduous? Why is it taking so long? And I'm sure you have answers to that. There are rules we have to follow and procedures we have to follow.
Yeah, you're right. A lot of it is because of the legal rules that are coming from the state and even the nationwide rules from IDEA, which is the Individuals with Disabilities Education Act. You're testing me here.
Very good.
So we do have to follow all of the laws. That's maybe thing number one. And thing number two is just it's about making sure that our licensed services are spread kind of fairly for the students who do have that most need for a licensed kind of more medical professional to support them. Or can we more quickly help their teacher with a strategy that they could use not just with that one student, but with multiple students in their classroom, or with maybe all future students who are having that same type of more common problem? Or like in the case of the pandemic, is this truly a disability that is causing this issue, this access issue? Or is it the fact that many kids are having the same type of problem because of the pandemic and the results of that on all kids? I would love to believe that any student could benefit from time with an occupational therapist, but at the end of the day, they're here to learn and to be with their class and to participate in their kind of school or classroom community, not to go to therapy. And the therapy, whether it's occupational or physical, is only there if that student is unable to access their education without it. And that's the key.
How about for students who maybe have an accident, they have a cast on their arm, or they're temporarily have a cast on their leg? Are they eligible for occupational or physical therapy based on something that's going to be temporary for them?
That usually falls under 504. And that, depending on the age level, so I think elementary school is usually run by the principal or counselor.
Sure is. I know those. Yeah, I know how to do 504s.
And the middle school and high schools are usually counselors, I believe. Mm-hmm. And they will reach out to us and say, Johnny broke his leg. We need some support on how to get him to a toilet. And unfortunately, we spend a lot of time in bathrooms.
Sure.
teaching transfers, but Craig would go in and evaluate how Johnny transfers. We, of course, need the medical information from the doctors of what the surgery was, so we know how much support to give.
And I think that's a good illustration of things that people don't think about. So you have a 7-year-old student who all of a sudden has a full leg cast. They're going to need some support, especially in the restroom or anything else around how to get their lunch tray and things like that. So those are things that you're helping with and helping brainstorm ideas or directly supporting the kids with that.
Out at recess and everything.
Come up with some alternate activities.
Carry in their tray and, you know, in the cafeteria, just all
and
sorts
PE.
Of
PE. PE is a big one.
Yeah, PE would be a big one. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Especially some of our gyms are really busy, so there's lots of chaotic kids running around. They could knock Johnny off his
for sure.
Crutches.
Poor Johnny. Poor Johnny can't hold his pencil, and now we've got him with a broken leg, and he needs help getting to the restroom.
There are some Sallys out there, too.
Okay, of course there are. Of course there are. So Johnny has qualified. So then how do you guys figure out how often do I get to see Johnny, or how is that going to work? Do I provide some recommendations to the teacher, or do I see Johnny directly? And if so, how often? How does all that work?
Team decision.
Okay.
At the IEP team.
So the team comes together, which you guys would be a part of, and then you make those decisions. So, Rose, you're getting ready to explain it. We still got Johnny on the mind.
Yeah, so I think the biggest thing to think about is what is the team, including the parent and the teacher and their special education teacher, what's the team's biggest goals for the student? And based off of that, how much would we need an OT or a PT to be able to support that team in order to achieve that goal? So it really does depend a lot on what the student's goals are, what their priorities are for the year, because there might be 1,000 goals we could make.
Sure.
But we have to decide on what are the most important ones and who is needed in order to support those goals. And it could even depend on what are the skills of those individual teachers. There might be a teacher who's like, I've been through this,
right.
I've done it, I know what to do. And they might need less support than a newer teacher or a newer special ed teacher. So it just depends.
And we also want Johnny to be part of those goals,
for
too.
For sure.
Because
yeah.
we
Especially
have more success
as the kid gets older.
If the kid is motivated to.
Yeah, there's a lot of factors that go into it. It could even include is a fifth grader likely to care about this skill and be motivated to change?
Yeah, does he want to modify his pencil grip?
Right.
At fifth grade,
so
probably
Jace,
not.
So we heard from at the beginning, if he were in fifth or sixth grade, would he be as enthusiastic about making those sound effects, making his W's?
No.
And that's the thing we look at, you know, with older kids. We look at maybe they're not doing as much writing with, you know, a pencil. And so these days we teach a lot of kids speech to text and typing strategies for their written output. And because a lot of kids in fifth grade or later, they don't want to laboriously work on writing their letters perfectly. And so I don't blame them.
And they need to move on to higher level thinking skills, and they need to be spending their time in school on other goals at that age, besides just focusing for years and years and years on handwriting for a student who has underlying motor impairments that may never go away in their life. There's so many other strengths that student might have and ways that they can build their skills, whether it's writing or something else.
Kind of on the PT side of it, as I think through some of our kids, since I've been here so long. Like in the early elementary, a lot of our goals are surrounding how do they get down for circle time and how do they sit and tolerate sitting unsupported at circle time. And as a fifth grader and moving forward, they're not getting down onto the ground.
Right.
So our goals change and adapt towards what they are doing in their school day.
Do you find that, and based on what we've talked about so far, that most of the referrals and your early consultations about kids are at the elementary level?
Most of the time.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Like what would be an example when we have a middle school kid or a high school kid getting occupational therapy or physical therapy for the first time?
A big example would be a student that has a traumatic injury, like a spinal cord injury, and their whole life has changed overnight. That's probably the most drastic example I can think of.
We have a few students in the district that have degenerative conditions as well, which means their condition worsens over time, so they might have an increasing need for services as they get older. And it still might be more of a consultation kind of model, because at that point you can really talk to the student about, hey, what's the most challenging part of your day and how can we make this better? And how can we help you learn to advocate for yourself, rather than a kindergarten student is and obviously going to look different.
I find, too, that the older the child is, a student is, the more they are learning. Our focus is a little different in what they, you know, want to be able to do independently. Like, I work a lot in the middle school and the high school kids, and instead of working on handwriting, a lot of them, they want to be able to get into their locker independently. Mm-hmm. They want to be able to be organized with their classwork and be able to turn their, you know, work in on time. And so we work a lot on more executive functioning skills, how to get your assignments done in a timely manner, how to, what are your barriers keeping you from being a successful student in middle and high school. And so the focus really does change as they get older. It's not just on handwriting per se. It's sort of always evolving as they get older. So,
just like occupational therapy needs evolve for kids, from primary pencil placement to pivoting padlocks, this discussion with NCSD's OTs and PTs continues to evolve as well. So far, we've taken a closer look at how students qualify for these important extra services. But what if a student's need for a little extra support isn't physical at all?
I've been getting a lot of referrals for students with sensory processing difficulties. So they're just having a hard time regulating their emotions, regulating their bodies.
And what's the best part about being an occupational or physical therapist for North Clackamas District students?
I love that I get to go to recess all day and PE and just knowing that we are making a difference for these kids and advocating for them to be included rather than sitting on the sidelines.
The second half of the Proud to be NCSD podcast is up next, right after this short recess.
Are you looking for a job right now? Looking to work in a fun and supportive environment with great pay and a rewarding career? The North Clackamas School District is hiring. We're currently filling full and part-time positions. You can work and make a difference in young lives and education as a classroom assistant or substitute teacher. Apply to work in one of our school cafeterias, where our lunch staff serves up big smiles with great food every day. We're also looking to hire before and after school caretakers, custodians, and bus drivers. In North Clackamas, we promise it won't take you long to learn why our employees say they're proud to be in NCSD. Apply today on the North Clackamas School District website or call 503-353-6000. That's 503-353-6000.
And Lisa, that was going to lead right to my next question, because I think people are probably interested in, is there a most common thing that you see kids for? I'm sure it's a wide variety, but we've talked about pencil grip at the younger kids level. I didn't think of navigating a locker. That would be something for sure. Shoe tying. That's a good one too. So that's what I was going to get into. What are the things that you see most commonly that maybe our listeners wouldn't think of? Oh yeah, I could see how a child would have trouble with that. And that's why you guys are a part of our district. So what are some things that you deal with on a daily basis or weekly basis?
I think that fine motor skills used to kind of be the bread and butter of our OT team. Mm-hmm. But over the last couple years, I think especially post-COVID, I've been getting a lot of referrals for students with sensory processing difficulties. So they're just having a hard time regulating their emotions, regulating their bodies. And, you know, sometimes it's behavior issues. Sometimes it's leading to they're just having difficulty participating because they're overwhelmed by their environment, or they're having a hard time participating because they're seeking some sort of sensory input that helps them feel regulated but makes it so they can't do their schoolwork. And so the team calls us in, because we're kind of considered the sensory experts, to do a sensory evaluation, which usually involves a questionnaire that goes to the teacher that then we analyze, and it helps us say, yes, they are avoiding auditory stimuli. Sure. And they're seeking movement-based stimuli.
So you guys are kind of like the detectives trying to figure out what is causing the student to act the way he or she is, and it's usually in response to, and I didn't even think of that. You think of physical therapy or physical things that the kid does, but there's a lot of emotional regulation that you're trying to uncover and help a child through. And Rose, I remember when we visited Jace earlier in the podcast, we didn't put this part on the recording, but you did some deep breaths with him at the beginning, and he did a couple of pushes against the wall to kind of get himself centered. So that's something that you guys are working on quite a bit too, that I think our listeners maybe don't realize, that our OTs and PTs are also helping kids with emotional regulation as well.
Yeah, I think that's part of it. We share the strategies with teachers and support staff that they can do those stretches or those, you know, movements to help build those strengthening, you know, the skills on a daily basis, because we're not there every day at that particular school. And I also want to add to what Morgan said about post-COVID, that I seem to be seeing a lot more just weak, I don't know, trunk strength.
Weak core muscles,
weak,
right?
Core muscles, okay. Yeah, like kids were stuck in the house for a while during COVID, and they're not out playing on the playgrounds and running around and building their hands, and Johnny's falling out of his chair, you know, kind of thing. Poor Johnny.
Yeah.
Johnny's had a rough time during this podcast.
You know, is it because Johnny wants to fall out of his chair because he's, you know, or is it because his core strength is weak, you know? So we have to kind of go in and, yes, detectives is kind of what we all are here. It's figuring out what's going on with the student and what are the barriers going on and how can we help?
We've also noticed with the whole post-COVID thing, weaker hand muscles because there's a lot of time spent on Chromebooks where you're not really using your hands the way that you would be if you were in school holding a pencil or even
coloring.
Doing crafts, playing video games,
playground,
and doing things on the computer doesn't build hand strength.
So I would imagine kids are having trouble maybe with using scissors for the first time or opening containers or the glue sticks that you have to roll to get the glue to come out of. A lot of things that we just don't think about, they just didn't have that practice.
In an OT school, that's kind of what we do. Like, you know, we do a lot of task analysis for things, figuring out what strengths or what skills are needed to do bilateral tasks like opening a glue stick or a marker and getting having the strength to be able to work with both hands together. So breaking down tasks, figuring out what's the block that's keeping that student to being successful.
And you mentioned opening containers. That is something else that we will sometimes address is self-care skills. So if we have a student who is having a hard time zipping or unzipping their coat or opening their lunch containers or doing buttons, those would be kind of the functional skills that they need on a daily basis, but maybe isn't directly tied to their academics.
And from a PT standpoint, it's a little different. We do a lot of transfers. We've noticed the kids have less endurance for activities, which is probably why they're falling out of their chair.
Okay, so transfers, help me understand what transfers are. So this is from one location to another, maybe?
Yeah, okay. And a transfer could be how they're walking from their classroom to the playground, or a transfer could be how they're getting from their wheelchair to their classroom chair or to the lunch table so that they can sit with their friends. A lot of our kids in wheelchairs tend to be off to the side, and our job is to get them in the middle and so that they can access the lunchroom, the playgrounds, the restrooms, PE. And so we've definitely seen an increase of balance issues and endurance.
So we have kids who are in wheelchairs but can get themselves to the cafeteria and maybe transfer to a cafeteria seat so they can sit with their friends?
Yeah.
Or
yeah.
Same thing, going to music class or somewhere else.
Right.
Okay.
Yep. And we work with a lot of different types of adaptive equipment.
Okay.
And so some of our higher need kids might have a stander that you see, and we have them standing during music class.
Mm.
We found that super beneficial, especially for our high school kids that are in choir.
Okay.
Standing upright to sing is a lot easier than when you're sitting hunched in your wheelchair. And helping the staff find easier ways to protect the student and the staff member, because most of our kids in wheelchairs need support to transfer.
And I would imagine that with North Clackamas staff members, you get a lot of help from them. I'm sure they want to do what's best for their kid, and there are probably lots of staff members who don't get the recognition they probably deserve for going out of their way to make students in their classroom feel even more included.
That's 1,000% correct. I think the most success we have is when we have the team members that are with the kids every single day, and they're working on the tasks that the kids need and want to succeed.
And North Clackamas has fantastic staff.
They sure do.
Especially, I'm going to shout out the paraeducators, because they have the hardest job in the district.
And it's things that they would have never thought was part of their job description.
Right. Yep.
Absolutely.
And they take it like a champ.
So we have some students that maybe have a certain paraeducator that's assigned to them most of the day, or a one-on-one assistant. Is that the case?
It depends.
Okay, rotating group of paraeducators?
Usually rotating.
Okay.
If the students are in an SLCA classroom or a TLC, there's multiple staff members that work with them. We do have some kids that are in general education, and they just have one staff member that works with them for their transfers, or if they need more than one person.
you mentioned something very quickly, Morgan, the push-in model. And for our listeners who don't know what that basically means that you are pushing into the classroom rather than pulling a student out for services. Like we heard at the beginning where Rose was working with Jace in a separate area, there are probably times when Rose goes into that classroom and works with Jace directly. So let's talk about the different models that you use to help kids with OT or PT.
So thinking back over the million years I've been here, we used to do only pull out.
Mm-hmm.
We used to pull the kids out of class, work on a couple of skills, balance, how they're sitting in their chair, and then say, okay, go back to class. And there was no carryover.
Mm-hmm.
The staff didn't see what we were doing. The student couldn't take what we were working on in that small little space and bring it back to their classroom and utilize it. So over the years, we have worked diligently with the teams of like, let us come into the classroom, watch how we're putting Johnny in the stander, and then you can do it every day. Or let's go to PE and see how they're catching a ball. And then the paraeducators can then help support that on the days that we're not in PE with Johnny. So there was just so much more carryover and more success when the teams knew what we were doing.
And that's what the research is showing more and more now too, is the more that we can get into those classrooms and model what we would do with a student and collaborate with our fellow teachers or special education teachers or paraprofessionals, the better results that the student ends up getting.
And how rewarding is it for all of you to visit that classroom again and see what you had worked on or what you had tutored the paraeducator or the teacher with, and to see that in action and smiles on kids' faces, mm-hmm. because they're participating. That's got to be very rewarding for you.
I think that's what keeps us all coming back is when I see kids in ATP and they're like, hey, Miss Lisa, I remember you from when I was in elementary school. You taught me how to do this or that, and I can do it myself now.
And I'm thinking too, when we did the pullout model, things that we thought were like the best ideas ever, and then we expect staff to do it in
right.
the classroom, and it just would not work.
Yeah.
Whatever the reason, whether it was all the kids around or the space or whatever, it's really important to be able to collaborate with the teachers and from all different areas, whether it's music or the classroom teacher or the paraeducators or the playground teachers, to like make sure that we're all on the same page.
Mm-hmm. I think now what we do a lot is a combination. So for example, I might pull Jace once a month to work with him directly, and that's when I get to really see how are you doing on these skills when you're in a distraction-free environment one-on-one, and what strategies can I use that you easily pick up on and that you might be able to be independent with in the classroom. And then the other times that I see him during the month, I'm either with his small group that he sees every day or in his regular education classroom, and that's when I get to share those ideas and strategies, and he already has seen that activity before. He kind of knows how to do it, and that's where we can really work on transferring it to the everyday environment.
As I've said many times during interviews on this podcast, I am a sucker for success stories. And Lisa, you mentioned a little bit about this because you've seen students now in the ATP program that you had way back in elementary school. Now, I don't want any of you to mention any names, but I would love to hear any stories you might have of students you met maybe at an early age, you've worked with them for a few years, and now you're just amazed at what they're accomplishing now. I'd love to hear any stories like that. Do you have any of those?
I have a handful. Someone that came to mind who is no longer in the district, he is, I believe, a lawyer. He had a pretty severe diagnosis with a lot of medical complications, but he made it from kindergarten through 18 here and went on to college and, you know, was
Did you meet him as a kindergartner and follow him through?
He was second grade, I believe.
Mm-hmm. When you
York
met him.
School,
okay.
Actually.
Okay.
When I met him. And yeah, now he's out being an adult.
What? You mean North Clackamas kids grow up to be adults and do adult things?
Yeah, so I haven't seen him in about 2 years, but the last time I did, he was finishing his undergrad and choosing which law school he wanted to
attend.
Wow,
fantastic.
Yeah, I met a girl that I had started with in third grade, and I actually met her. She was at the New Seasons out here in Happy Valley, and she came up to me. I didn't even recognize her, and she said, hey, Miss Lisa, guess what? And I said, I'm always like, oh. I forgot her name, but
yep.
She remembered mine. And I said, what? And she said, I just graduated from high school, and I'm moving in with my friend, and we're going to get an apartment together and go to college over at Clackamas Community College. And I mean, I was amazed because she, you know, has come so far.
Sure.
And now she was excited to tell me about how she was moving out and being independent. I mean, I think that's what we all want with our kids is to be have a successful school experience and then move on and become independent adults. So mm-hmm. that's our long-term goal.
And I think the only way it happens is having the collaboration between what we do as this weird job as don't know what we do a lot.
That's why you're here.
And working with all the teachers and staff from kindergarten through 21.
I think occupational therapists have kind of an issue, you know, no matter what age we work with, because people, they don't know what occupational therapy is. And so they always look at us and say, what?
Like, what do you do?
What are you trying to give my child a job? I mean, the cool thing about occupational therapy and physical therapy is we have such a great job because we touch an every area of a student's life, and we can make a lot of difference in somebody having a successful, positive, independent life. And so I think that's what drew me to occupational therapy from the get-go.
From the PT side, we always get called the OTs. People just don't know we exist. But the best part for me is knowing that some of these kids I've gotten to be with since kindergarten. You know, most teachers have their students for a year
right,
or two.
Right, for 1 year, yeah.
And the kids move on, but just watching some of these kids. We have a group of boys right now that are ATP that when they were in kindergarten, they were a handful,
yeah.
But they're doing awesome now.
Nicole, if it makes you feel any better, I get mistaken for a PT frequently.
Oh,
yeah.
Good to know.
People say, who are you again? You're a PT, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like,
yeah.
No, OT.
We like to tease the PTs. They spend a lot of time in the bathroom, especially Nicole. So
that's part of the job.
We call her the bathroom queen.
Part of the job. Well, that was the goal of this podcast, is to educate people on the wonderful things that you do throughout our district and the difference between occupational therapy and physical therapy. And we've touched on that a little bit here, too. As we start to run out of time, one simple way to end this, tell me the best part about being a school-based occupational therapist or physical therapist. And some of you have touched on this already, is to see kids succeed. So what is the best part of your job? What do you see as the best part of the job that you do that sometimes gets overlooked in our district? And that's the purpose of this podcast, is to make sure it doesn't get overlooked.
I just really like being part of the school community and really contributing towards the overall goals that this district has.
Well, I made the switch from working with older adults to working with kids. And I feel that there's so much hope and promise for these students. You know, they're at the beginning of their lives. They have so much ahead of them. So it was very refreshing for me, you know, working with people who were sometimes on hospice or, you know, very close to the end of their life, to suddenly working with kids where I felt like this is the future.
And I just love working with all the special ed staff in the schools, because I think North Clackamas has a fantastic group of teachers, and I just really enjoy working with the kids because kids don't really know they're getting therapy. They just think we're having fun mm-hmm. and having a good time, and we're actually strengthening skills. So it's kind of a great all-around, I get paid to play with kids situation.
I'm similar. I love that I get to go to recess all day and PE and just knowing that we are making a difference for these kids and advocating for them to be included rather than sitting on the sidelines. There's a little bit of a passionate side that Craig and I are working on right now, is making these playgrounds more inclusive mm-hmm. so that our kids can play with their friends.
I will just mention the rest of our team members who are not here. So as we mentioned, we're in feeder system, so we're each kind of in charge of some elementary schools, middle school, and high school. So not present today, we have Anya, who is with the
Nelson
feeder system. Thank you. And then we have Annie, who is with the
Clackamas
feeder system. And then Melanie, who this year is in a new role. She is supporting us with evaluations. So she kind of travels the whole district helping out with evaluations. And then she also works at the Early Childhood Evaluation mm-hmm. Center. And then, of course, Craig, our physical therapist, who is over the whole district as well.
Yep, one and only physical therapist.
One and only Craig.
And we can't forget Melissa. She's another CODA. She works one day a week on Fridays, and she supports Ardenwald, Milwaukee High School, and Oregon Trail Elementary.
Well, the purpose of this podcast on the Proud to Be NCSD podcast is to try to recognize all of the amazing staff members we have within our North Clackamas School District. And I think we've really found some gems with this one. And there are people that are often overlooked. Our occupational therapists, our physical therapists, who to work a lot of times behind the scenes to make sure our kids are successful. But you ask any elementary school kid or middle or high school kid who receives services from any of these people here, and you'll see nothing but smiles and I'm sure gratitude from them and all of you here today. So Lisa and Nicole and Rose and Morgan, you truly make us proud to be in CSD. So thanks so much for being here. I'm glad we got a chance to get to know all of you, and hopefully people now have a better understanding of what you do on your job and how you help kids become successful in our school district. Thanks again for being here.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to the Proud to Be NCSD podcast. In North Clackamas, we know that education is a community effort, and we're so thankful that you and your family are a part of our community. Until next time, remember, there are always great things to see wherever you go in NCSD.